We may here note that N rays are due to vibrations in the etheric double, causing waves in the surrounding ether. The student will recollect that N rays are given off by animals, flowers and metals, but that all alike, when under the influence of chloroform, cease to emit them. They are also never emitted by a corpse. It will also be recollected that anesthetics, such as chloroform, expel etheric matter from the physical body, cp. 5, thus of course preventing the emanation of the rays. A full and controlled possession of etheric sight enables a man to see through physical matter. A brick wall, for example, seems to have the consistency of a light mist. The contents of a closed box could be accurately described and a sealed letter read. With a little practice, it is also possible to find a passage in a closed book. When the faculty is perfectly developed, it is completely under control, and may be used or not used at will. It is said to be easy to change from ordinary to etheric vision as to alter the focus of the eyes, the change being in reality a focusing of consciousness. The earth is transparent to etheric vision to a certain extent, so that a man can see to a considerable depth, much as in fairly clear water. A creature burrowing underground could thus be seen, or a vein of coal or metal could be seen, if not too far below the surface. The medium through which we are looking is thus not perfectly transparent. Bodies of men and animals are, in the main, transparent, so that the action of the internal organs can be seen, and to some extent disease may be diagnosed in this manner. Etheric sight makes visible many entities, such as the lower orders of nature spirits, which have etheric bodies. In this class are nearly all the fairies, gnomes and brownies, of which many stories are told in the highlands of Scotland, Ireland and other countries. There is a class of beautiful fairies with etheric bodies who live upon the surface of the earth, and who have come up the ladder of evolution through grasses and cereals, ants and bees, and tiny nature spirits. After their time as etheric fairies, they become salamanders or fire spirits, then sylphs or air spirits, and later still they pass into the kingdom of the angels. The forms of fairies are many and various, but most frequently human in shape and somewhat diminutive in size, usually with a grotesque exaggeration of some particular feature or limb. Etheric matter being plastic and readily molded by the power of thought, they are able to assume almost any appearance at will. But, nevertheless, they have definite forms of their own which they wear when they have no special reason for taking any other. In order to take a form other than his own, a fairy must conceive it clearly and keep his mind fixed upon it. As soon as his thought wanders, he will at once resume his natural appearance. Etheric matter does not obey the power of thought as instantaneously as does astral matter. We might say that mental matter changes with the thought, astral matter so quickly after that the ordinary observer can scarcely note any difference. But with etheric matter, one's vision can follow the growth or diminution without difficulty. An astral sylph flashes from one shape to another, an etheric fairy swells or decreases quickly, but not instantaneously. There are also limits, though wide ones, within which a fairy can alter his size. Thus a fairy naturally 12 inches high might expand himself to 6 feet high, but only with a considerable strain which he could not maintain for more than a few minutes. One of the streams of evolving life, after leaving the mineral kingdom, instead of passing into the vegetable kingdom, assumes etheric vehicles, which inhabit the interior of the earth, living actually within solid rock, which offer no impediment to their motion or their vision. At a later stage, though still inhabiting the solid rock, they live close to the surface of the earth, and the more developed of them can occasionally detach themselves from it for a short time. These gnomes, which have sometimes been seen, and perhaps more frequently heard, in caves or mines, become visible either by materializing themselves by drawing around them a veil of physical matter, or, of course, by the spectator becoming temporarily etherically clairvoyant. They would be seen more frequently than they are, were it not for the rooted objection to the proximity of human beings which they share with all but the lowest types of nature spirits. Some of the lower types of etheric nature spirits are not pleasing to the aesthetic sense. There are shapeless masses with huge red gaping mouths, which live upon the loathsome etheric emanations of blood and decaying flesh, rapacious red-brown crustacean creatures which hover over houses of ill fame, and savage octopus-like monsters which gloat over the orgies of the drunkard and revel in the fumes of alcohol. The entities posing or accepted as tribal deities, for whom blood sacrifices are made, or food, preferably of flesh, is burnt, are very low-grade creatures, possessing etheric bodies, for it is only through etheric bodies that they can absorb physical fumes and derive either nourishment or pleasure from them. The stories told of ointments and drugs which, when applied to the eyes, enable a man to see the fairy people have a basis in truth. No anointing of the eyes could open the astral vision, though, if rubbed over the whole body, some ointments assist the astral body to leave the physical in full consciousness. But the application to the physical eyes might stimulate etheric sight. Etheric sight would of course make the etheric doubles of men visible. These doubles would often be seen hovering over newly made graves. At seances, etheric matter could be seen oozing from the left side of the medium, and one could perceive the various ways in which the communicating entities make use of it. Etheric sight makes visible several entirely new colors, quite different from those in the spectrum, as we know it, and therefore indescribable in words we use at present. In some cases these other colors are combined with colors that we know, so that two surfaces which to ordinary eyes appear to match perfectly would appear different to etheric sight. For the chemist a whole fresh world would come under observation, and he could deal with ethers as he now deals with liquids or gases. There are, belonging to the mineral kingdom, many etheric substances, the existence of which is unknown to Western science. Even the bodies of men, in the first round, were constructed of etheric matter only, and resembled vague, drifting and almost shapeless clouds. Etheric sight would inform us of the healthiness or otherwise of our surroundings, and we should be able to detect disease germs or other impurities. The beneficial effects of travel are partially due to the change of the etheric and astral influences connected with each place and district. Ocean, mountain, forest or waterfall each has its own special type of life, astral and etheric as well as visible, and, therefore its own special set of impressions and influences. Many of the unseen entities are pouring out vitality, and in any case the vibrations which they radiate, awaken unaccustomed portions of men's etheric doubles, and of their astral and mental bodies, the effect being like that of exercising muscles which are not ordinarily called into activity, somewhat tiring at the time, yet distinctly healthy and desirable in the long run. Such amusements as rowing, for example, or swimming, especially in the sea, are of especial value, for the reasons named. There is a basis of truth in the tradition that it is strengthening to sleep under a pine tree with the head to the north, for the magnetic currents flowing over the surface of the earth, by steady gentle pressure, gradually comb out the entanglements and strengthen the particles both of the astral body and of the etheric double, and thus give rest and calm. The radiations of the pine tree make the man sensitive to the magnetic currents, and, in addition, the tree is constantly throwing off vitality in that special condition in which it is easiest for man to absorb it. There is a kind of magnetic tide, and outflow and backflow of magnetic energy between the sun and earth, the turning points of which are at noon and midnight. The great etheric currents which are constantly sweeping over the surface of the earth from pole to pole possess a volume which makes their power as irresistible as that of the rising tide, and there are methods by which this stupendous force may be safely utilized, though unskillful attempts to control it will be fraught with danger. It is also possible to use the tremendous force of etheric pressure. In addition, by changing matter from a grosser to a subtler kind, the vast store of potential energy which lies dormant may be liberated and utilized, somewhat as latent heat energy may be liberated by a change of condition of visible matter. A reversal of the above process enables one to change matter from the etheric to the solid condition, and thus to produce a materialization phenomenon. This faculty is sometimes employed in cases of emergency, where a man in his astral body, an invisible helper, is in need of means of acting on physical matter. The faculty demands considerable power of sustained concentration, and the mind must not be taken off for one half second, or the matter of the materialized form will instantly fly back into its original condition. The reason why a physical object, after being reduced to the etheric condition, can afterwards be restored to its former shape, is that the elemental essence is retained in the same shape, and when the will force is removed, the essence acts as a mold which the solidifying particles re-aggregate. If, however, a solid object be raised to a gaseous condition by heat, the elemental essence which informed the object will be dissipated, not because the essence itself can be affected by heat, but because when its temporary body is destroyed as a solid, it pours back into the great reservoir of such essence, much as a man's higher principles, though entirely unaffected by heat and cold, are yet forced out of a physical body when the latter is destroyed by fire. Means must then be employed to reduce a physical object to etheric condition, and then to move it from one place to another, even through solid matter, such as a brick wall, by an astral current, with great rapidity. As soon as the disintegrating force is withdrawn, the matter is forced by the etheric pressure into its original condition. When a man becomes etherically sensitive, in addition to sight, in most cases a corresponding change would at the same time take place in the other senses. Thus it is claimed by astrologers that planetary influences, by expanding or congesting the etheric atmosphere, make the conditions for meditation respectively more or less favorable. Incense is said to act on the etheric body somewhat as colors do on the astral body, and so may be employed to bring a man's vehicles rapidly into harmony. It appears that certain odors may be used to act on various parts of the brain. The effect of etheric sight is quite different from that of astral sight. In the case of astral sight, an entirely new element is introduced, often described as that of a fourth dimension. With such vision, for example, a cube would be seen as though it were all flattened out, all its sides being equally visible as well as every particle within it. With etheric sight, however, one merely sees through objects, and the thickness of matter through which one is looking makes a great difference to the clearness of the sight. Such considerations have no effect whatever on astral vision. The word "through" used by W. T. Stead in referring to four-dimensional sight is a perfect description, not of astral, but of etheric vision. Etheric sight can also be used for purposes of magnification. The method is to transfer impressions from the etheric matter of the retina direct to the etheric brain. The attention is focused in one or more etheric particles, and thus is obtained a similarity of size between the organ employed and some minute object being observed. A commoner method, though one demanding higher development, is to project a flexible tube of etheric matter from the center of the chakram between the eyebrows, having one atom at its end which serves as a lens. Such an atom must have all its seven spirally fully developed. The atom can be expanded or contracted at will. This power belongs to the causal body, so that when an etheric atom forms the lens, a system of reflecting counterparts must be introduced. By a further extension of the same power, the operator, by focusing his consciousness in the lens, can project it to distant points. The same power, by a different arrangement, can be used for diminishing purposes, this giving a vision of something too large to be taken in at once by ordinary vision. This power was symbolized by a small snake projecting from the center of the forehead in the headdress of the pharaoh of Egypt. Much of the clairvoyance shown by dead people at a spiritualistic séance, enabling them to read passages out of a closed book, is of the etheric type. One of the varieties of telepathy is etheric, and may take either of two forms. In the first, an etheric image is made which can be seen by a clairvoyant; in the second, the etheric waves, which the creation of the image generates, radiate out and, striking upon another etheric brain, tend to reproduce in it the same image. The organ in the brain for thought transference, both transmitting and receiving, is the pineal gland. If anyone thinks intently on an idea, vibrations are set up in the ether which permeates the gland, thereby causing a magnetic current, which gives rise to a slight quiver or creeping feeling. This feeling indicates that the thought is clear and strong enough to be capable of transmission. With most people, the pineal gland is not yet fully developed, as it will be in the course of evolution. There is known to occult students a process by which rays of light may be bent, so that after passing round an object they may resume exactly their former course. This would, Of course, make the object round which the rays were bent invisible to ordinary sight. It may be surmised that this phenomenon would result from a power to manipulate the particular form of etheric matter which is the medium for the transmission of light. Chapter 23 Magnetization of Objects. A man may employ his magnetism or vital fluid not only for mesmerizing or healing other persons, but he may also use it to impregnate physical objects in a somewhat similar manner. Any object, in fact, which has been in close contact with an individual will absorb that individual's magnetism, and consequently will tend to reproduce in the person who wears it something of the same state of feeling or thought with which it is charged. This, of course, is part of the rationale of talismans, charms and relics, as well as of the feelings of devotion and reverential awe which sometimes quite literally exude from the walls of cathedrals and churches, each stone of which is a veritable talisman, charged with the reverence and devotion of the builder, consecrated by the bishop, and reinforced by the devotional thought forms of successive generations for thousands of years. The process is continually at work, though few are conscious of it. Thus, for example, food tends to become charged with the magnetism of those who handle or come near it, a fact which is at the back of the strict rules which Hindus observe regarding eating food in the presence of, or which has been subjected to the magnetism of, one of the lower caste. To the occultist, magnetic purity is as important as physical cleanliness. Such food as bread and pastry are especially liable to be charged with the magnetism of the person who prepares them, owing to the fact that magnetism flows out most strongly through the hands. Fortunately, the action of fire in baking or cooking removes most kinds of physical magnetism. Some occult students, in order to prevent any avoidable mixture of magnetism, insist upon using only their own private eating utensils, and even would not permit their hair to be cut except by someone whose magnetism they approved, the head of course being the part of the body where alien magnetism would be most objectionable. Books, especially those in a public library, tend to become loaded with all kinds of mixed magnetism. Precious stones, being the highest development of the mineral kingdom, have very great power of receiving and retaining impressions. Many jewels are saturated with feelings of envy and greed and, in the case of some of the great historical jewels, are impregnated with physical and other emanations associated with crimes that have been committed in order to possess them. Such jewels retain these impressions unimpaired for thousands of years, so that psychometers may see around them pictures of indescribable horror. For this reason, most occultists would discourage the wearing of jewels, as a general rule. On the other hand, gems may be powerful reservoirs of good and desirable influence. Thus, for example, the Gnostic gems employed at initiation ceremonies 2,000 years ago retain even to this day powerful magnetic influence. Some Egyptian scarabaei are still effective, though much older even than the Gnostic gems. Money, in the form of coins and notes, is frequently charged with highly unpleasant magnetism. Not only does it become charged with a great mixture of different kinds of magnetism, but it is, in addition, surrounded by the thoughts and feelings of those who have handled it. The disturbing and irritating effect of such emanations on astral and mental bodies has been compared to that produced by the bombardment of radium emanations on the physical body. The worst offenders are copper and bronze coins, and old and dirty banknotes. Nickel is less receptive of evil influences than copper, while silver and gold are better still in this respect. Bedding affords another example of physical objects absorbing and emanating magnetic influence, many people having observed that unpleasant dreams may often be caused by sleeping on a pillow which has been used by a person of unpleasant character. If wool is used of bedding or clothing, it is better not to let it touch the skin, owing to it being saturated with animal influence. The method of deliberately manufacturing a talisman is, first thoroughly to cleanse the object of its present etheric matter by passing it through a film of etheric matter which has been created for the purpose by an effort of will. The old etheric matter or magnetism having been thus removed, the ordinary ether of the surrounding atmosphere replaces it, for there is an etheric pressure somewhat corresponding to, though immensely greater than, atmospheric pressure. A similar process is then effected for astral and mental matter, the object thus becoming, as it were, a clean sheet on which one may write as one wills. The operator then, placing his right hand on the object, fills himself with the particular qualities which he wishes to convey to the talisman, and wills that those qualities shall flow into it. An experienced occultist can perform the whole process almost instantaneously by a strong effort of will. But others will need to spend more time on it. The above would constitute one of the class of general talismans. An adapted talisman is one specially charged to meet the requirements of a particular individual, almost like an individual prescription, rather than a general tonic. An ensouled talisman is one designed to continue as a source of radiation for centuries. There are two varieties. In one there is placed in the talisman a fragment of a higher mineral, which throws out a ceaseless stream of particles. These particles become charged with the force stored in the talisman, the actual work of distribution being done by the mineral, thereby greatly economizing energy. The second variety is one in which the ingredients are so arranged as to make it a means of manifestation of one of certain classes of undeveloped nature spirits, these latter providing the force necessary for the dissemination of the influence. Such talismans may last for thousands of years, to the intense delight of the nature spirit, and the great benefit of all who approach the magnetized center. A linked talisman is one so magnetized as to bring it in close rapport with its maker, so that it becomes a kind of outpost of his consciousness. The wearer of the talisman could thus through his link send a cry for help to its builder, or the builder could direct a stream of influence through it to the wearer. Such a talisman would facilitate what Christian scientists call absent treatment. In rare cases, a physical talisman may be connected with the causal body of an adept, as was done with those talismans buried in various countries by Apollonius of Tyana, about 1,900 years ago, in order that the force which they radiated might prepare those places to be the centers of great events in the future. Some of those centers have already been utilized, others are to be employed in the immediate future in connection with the work of the coming Christ. Great shrines are usually erected on the spot where some holy man lived, where some great event, such as an initiation, took place, or where there is a relic of a great person. In any of these cases, a powerful magnetic center of influence has been created which will persist for thousands of years. Even if the relic does not happen to be a very powerful one, or is not even genuine, the centuries of devotional feeling poured out upon it by the hosts of visitors would make the place an active center for beneficent radiation. The influence of all such places on visitors and pilgrims is unquestionably good. It has already been mentioned that precious stones are naturally suited to be made into talismans or amulets. The Rudrakshaberry, used frequently for necklaces in India, is eminently adapted for magnetization where spiritual thought or meditation is required and disturbing influences are to be kept away. The beads made from the Tulsi plant are another example, though the influence they give is of a somewhat different character. An interesting set of talismans are those objects which produce strong scents. The gums of which incense is made, for example, can be chosen so as to be favorable to spiritual and devout thought. It is also possible so to combine ingredients as to produce the opposite effect, as was sometimes done by medieval witches. A trained occultist makes a regular practice of charging many things which pass from him to others with beneficent influences, such, for example, as letters, books, or presents. By a single effort of will he may charge even a typed letter far more effectively than it would be unconsciously charged when written by hand by someone not familiar with these truths. Similarly, a trained occultist, by a mere wave of the hand, coupled with a strong thought, may almost instantaneously demagnetize food, clothing, bedding, rooms, etc. Such demagnetization, while removing magnetism which has been externally impressed, would not affect the innate magnetism of objects, such, for example, as the inherently unpleasant vibrations of dead flesh, which even cooking could not destroy. The process of demagnetizing rooms, etc., may be facilitated by the burning of incense or pastilles, or by sprinkling water, the incense and water being first passed through the process recommended for making talismans. It should also be borne in mind that as physical matter in man is in exceedingly close touch with the astral and mental, coarseness and grossness in the physical vehicle almost necessarily imply a corresponding condition in the other vehicles, hence the great importance to the occultist of physical as well as magnetic or etheric cleanliness. The holy water used in certain Christian churches affords a clear example of magnetization, water being very readily charged with magnetism. The instructions given in the Roman Rite make it quite evident that the priest is required, first, to exorcise the salt and water, that is, to cleanse them from all objectionable influences, and then, making the sign of the cross, he is directed to bless the elements, that is, to pour his own magnetism into them. His will being directed to the purpose of driving away all evil thoughts and feelings. It is worth nothing that salt contains chlorine, a fiery element, and hence the combination of water, the great solvent, with fire the great consumer, is highly effective as a cleansing agency. Precisely similar ideas underlie many other ceremonies in the Christian Church, such as baptism, in which the water is blessed and the sign of the cross made over it, the consecration of churches and burial grounds, of the vessels of the altar, the vestments of the priests, bells, incense, confirmation, the ordination of priests and consecration of bishops. In the Eucharist, the wine has a very powerful influence upon the high astral levels, while the water sends out even etheric vibrations. At baptism, in the liberal Catholic Church, the priest makes the sign of the cross over the forehead, throat, heart and solar plexus of the child. This has the effect of opening up these etheric chakrams, so that they grow to, perhaps, the size of a crown piece, and begin to sparkle and whirl as they do in grown-up people. In addition, the magnetized water, as it touches the forehead, sets violently in vibration the etheric matter, stimulates the brain, and through the pituitary body affects the astral body, and through that the mental body. Later the priest, by anointing the top of the head with chrism, makes the chakram there serve as a kind of sieve, which rejects the coarser feelings, influences or particles, and also, by an effort of will, he closes the four centers which have been opened. At confirmation, the effect which has been produced on the atomic principle is reflected into the etheric double. At the ordination of the priest, it is intended to clear the way between the higher principles and the physical brain. The blessing floods the etheric brain, and is meant to run up through the pituitary body, which is the point of closest junction between the dense physical, the etheric and the astral. The anointing of the head of the bishop with chrism is intended so to act on the Brahmarandra chakram that, instead of the usual saucer-like depression, it becomes more like a projecting cone, such as is often seen in statues of the Lord Buddha. The ordination of the cleric is intended principally to act on the etheric body, that of the doorkeeper on the astral, that of the reader or lector on the mental, and that of the exorcist on the causal body. The exorcist is helped at his ordination to strengthen his power of healing. There seems to have been an old custom, out of which has arisen the present Roman method of anointing the organs of the senses, of sealing all the chakrams in the body of a dying man, lest objectionable entities should seize upon that body as the owner left it and employ it for purposes of evil magic. It is probable that many nervous affections could be helped by anointing with consecrated oil. An etheric disease might well be cured by means of unction. In a bishop's crozier, in the knob of which the consecrated jewels are placed, the etheric energy which radiates from the jewels is the outermost and the most prominent, so prominent in fact that it would not be surprising if physical cures could be affected by its touch. Medieval alchemists also employed somewhat similar methods in their use of magnetized swords, drugs, etc. in the ancient mysteries. The physis was a powerfully magnetized instrument, which was laid against the spinal cord of the candidate, giving him in that way some of the magnetism with which it was charged. Chapter 24, Ectoplasm. Ectoplasm, from the Greek ektos, outside, and plasma, mold, that is, that which is molded outside the human body, is a name given to the matter, mainly if not wholly etheric, which exudes from a medium, and is employed for séance room phenomena.